Hello and welcome to The Brand Called You. Today, the brand is Mr. Sridhar Menon. Sridhar is almost a legendary figure in the Indian American community, both for his early and high achievements in the professional field, as well as the tremendous work he's done in the philanthropic spheres. He served as the deputy president and board member of American Express Bank. He was chairman of American Express Bank International. He was managing director in Lehman Brothers, where he led the emerging markets group. He was also the vice chairman of RRE Venture Capital Fund, which is a tech VC. Welcome to the show, Sridhar.
Thank you, Sandeep.
My first question is about your professional journey. You were one of the earliest Indians in the upper management of U.S. and global financial services, reaching the board of American Express Bank. Nowadays, I guess it's a lot more common and global and diversified, but at that time, I imagine it was not as diversified. Tell us about your experience first as the head of American Express Bank in India, and then making it to the board of the global bank.
Well, Sandeep, let me be very honest with you. When I joined American Express Bank in 1963 as an ordinary assistant, my greatest ambition was to become an assistant manager in that branch. Because in those days, in 63, there was hardly any Indian becoming a manager of country head.
Even in India?
In India, it was all expatriates, you know, in those days.
Right.
So I think it was a tremendous journey, excellent experience. And I would say I happened to be at the right place at the right time. And once I got to a position I always wanted, in a right spirit, my boss's job. Not that I wanted to be fired. What did it take me to get to his shoes? So that has been my motto throughout my journey in American Express Bank. And I must say, I succeeded very well. And it also true that you happen to be at the right place at the right time. Doesn't always come automatically.
Right.
And to refer to your question, that as one of the senior most to become a member of the board of American Express Bank, no, there were senior people in the U.S., you know, for example, Victor Meneses. Citibank was a senior vice chairman in those days.
Right.
And there were a couple of other people whom I knew in the Hartford Insurance Company, etc., you know, who was having very senior positions.
Yeah. That just proves my point. If you can count them on the fingers of your hand, then you were one of the earliest, because today, I guess, it's much more common. Did you walk into a room or a boardroom or sometimes and just had an experience where you or others, it felt different in the sense on that you were breaking some kind of a ceiling or breaking some kind of an expectation of a group as you got into one role after the other?
Fortunately, in American Express Company and the bank, so subsidiary, I don't think there was any kind of a glass ceiling like that.
Mm-hmm.
They did not view between where you came from, etc. I think meritocracy was the rule in American Express throughout my experience. You know, I mean, this is a company talking about people like Kenneth Shenault has become chairman and CEO too of American Express, you know, so when Ash Gupta, he interviewed last year, and I became very senior position too. So there's no glass ceiling at church, and I didn't find any kind of a bottleneck. No, once you prove yourself that you're capable of doing something and they hear your confidence, you move up.
Excellent. So that's good to hear that you never faced that. Now, American Express Bank was also lending in India, and that's never been easy. Witness the $200 billion or so in asset reconstruction even today. Did you find lending in India risky? lending in India to the Indian businesses, because that's the business you were building. Was it a risky business at that time? Was it easy to lend money and recover money, or was it always difficult, as has been proven to many banks in India recently?
Quite contrary, I would say, Sandeep, that India was among the network of American bank countries and branches. India was the most profitable country, and we hardly had any loan losses to name compared to the profitability used to make. And we had cream of clients, you know, most major groups in India for lending, deposits, letters of credit, foreign exchange. We were a kind of a bank, you know, providing most of the services needed by corporate houses. And we have relationship with the Mukesh Ambani group. We had, in those days, with Dilip Ambani. We have relations with Tata Group, we have relations with Singhania Group, we have relations with Goenka Group, we have relations with Jindals. No, we didn't lose any money. It was an exhilarating experience. And we wish we had more countries like India in our network.
So the current large asset reconstruction book or bad debt book in India, is that a localized public sector issue only, banks issue only? Or if you do your business properly, you think that India is a good place to run a debt book?
I would be inclined to say, from the my own experience and the instances I have followed, it is predominantly a public sector issue. Mm-hmm. But if you look at banks like HDFC, Axis Bank, even ICICI, barring an isolated incident, there is not such of an experience. A Kotak Mahindra Bank is a very successful bank too. Mm-hmm. I think it is predominantly applicable to the public sector banks. And to my mind, the reason was lack of enforcement or discipline as far as the chairman and CEO of that particular sector bank was concerned. I'm saying that, for example, if he or she was to be the CEO of a US-based bank and did the same thing, they would not have gotten away as they got away. There's no question about it.
Yeah. Well, other considerations are have to be managed, so I understand. That how do they end up when there is a mixture of objectives that the bank is trying to meet? That after your American Express and Lehman Brothers stint, you also spent time in the venture capital industry, serving as vice chairman of RRE Ventures. How was that experience? That was in the early years of the tech boom. As companies were really taking off, and what a journey it has been in the last 20, 25 years. Did you see the industry at that time as a kind of a potential goldmine, as it has proven to be in the past 20 years? How was it to be in that early phases of, not that early, but still early in the recent boom phase of this whole journey of internet companies that have grown over the last two decades?
Let me first respond to Lehman Brothers. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just quite accidental that I joined Lehman Brothers. If I didn't have a conflict of opinion as to how the bank should be run with the then CEO of American Express Bank, I would not have left American Express Bank. I was so happy there. Mm-hmm. And the reason I left American Express Bank was that CEO refused to extend a very lucrative facility to one of the best clients, you know, whom I am not sure in India. And I submitted papers the next day without any job or something in Lehman Brothers. And it happened that the Lehman Brothers CEO heard that I stepped down, and they knew that I had excellent relationships with the Asian markets, you know, starting from South Korea to Indonesia, Malaysia, etc. And they asked me whether would you be interested to join. It all happened over a lunch. And then I thought it was a nice thing to happen to me, because I was only coming down 3 floors from 22nd floor to the 19th floor. I was parking the car in the same garage and using the same dining room. No change in life apart from the name of the organization. And I had to wait until Lehman was spun off. I had to take a sort of a darn leave for 1 month, because I could not have joined Lehman. So long as Lehman continued to be a subsidiary of American Asset Bank, I would have lost perhaps a lot of my retirement benefits from Amex. So that was a very exciting experience, Lehman Brothers, because I turned out to be a very competitive person for Lehman for bringing businesses based on the excellent relationship I had built with the Indian industrialists. For example, if you know, Lehman Brothers was the first bank to lead an ADR or GDR for Reliance. So they co-lead with Morgan Stanley. Lehman Brothers was the first lead bank to lead GDR for State Bank of India. The same goes with Larsen & Toubro. Because this was all based on the excellent relationship I had built. And we went for beauty cutters like all of the banks. And in most of the cases, we won the mandate. It was a very exciting experience. And leaving Lehman Brothers, although in retrospect, it turned out to be good. The time I left, I regretted it, because the only reason I had to leave Lehman Brothers was based on the success I had in the stint at Lehman Brothers. They wanted me to move to Hong Kong as a very senior officer in Hong Kong for the Asian market, because that's where all my connections were. And that is just about nearly after we have relocated to Swaddles, New Jersey. And my wife, I know the situation, saying, you know, you go, I'm not coming.
Right.
School and studying, etc. You know, it was not convenient for it also. So I didn't go. I said, well, I'm not. So so Lehman hired somebody for that market. And that's the time I said, in that case, I will leave. And I had lunch with Jim Robinson, who was the chairman of RRE Ventures at that time. And he said, why don't you come and join us? And we are raising capital. And Jim knew that I had a lot of relationships in Asia, and particularly in some of the countries like UK, etc. So I joined them immediately. That's my chairman.
Did I hear it right? You said you put in your papers because the bank CEO refused to extend a loan to somebody you had recommended to. So is that instantaneous of a decision over 1 day, one deal?
It was an instantaneous decision of 1 day, overnight. And in fact, I didn't even tell my family, even my daughter. So when I went home that evening, I told family that I resigned. And poor Jyoti asked me, oh, Daddy, how are we going to eat from tomorrow? It was an instantaneous question that came out of my mind.
Right. Wow, that takes some guts. And then you ended up with...
Let me tell you, I gave a lot of importance to the relationship I built up.
Okay, so that was your secret throughout. Give relationship importance, and if you see the company doing something that you think is not right for the overall relationship, then you'd rather preserve the relationship than the job. Is that... Was that kind of the thinking behind that? Seems like, huh?
Yeah, that was, to put it right.
Yeah. Yeah. So moving to RRE then. So Jim Robinson was obviously the CEO at American Express overall at some point. That's how probably you had gotten to know him well. So you went from Lehman to RRE and joined as vice chairman with the responsibility to raise capital. Now, typically, one would think that's a job that goes to somebody who is well connected into the old boys network has gone to the same prep schools, universities, belongs to the same golf club. How did you kind of manage to do that role at that level?
To tell you an example, when they were raising the first fund, they went up to raise $100 million. Mm-hmm. And they had lined up Smith Barney as the lead investor of $15 million because Jim was very friendly with Sandy, who was the former chairman and CEO of Smith Barney as well as Citigroup, Sandy White. And I told Jim, yes, I got a lot of relationships. Jim knew that I had a lot of relationships, both in the Chinese community in Singapore, Hong Kong, and a couple of people in London. And of course, India, very difficult to get money for the wealthy people because of the exchange control regulation there. Not that easy. Still, I got a couple of people whose names I don't want to mention. And, they went to raise $100 million, but they couldn't reach the $100 million. They raised about 97.5. And I brought 25 million out of the 97.5, which is a good chunk of the first capital raise.
And that was all the relationships you had accumulated over time working in the bank and in Asia. Was that your main focus, or did you also extend that into India, into US?
The relationship built while I was working with the bank and built the clients, particularly in the rich Chinese business people in Hong Kong, mm-hmm. And as well as Singapore, and one or two of them in Malaysia.
Do you find any difference in building relationships in Asia versus in US, or is it all the same?
No, it's not all the same. In US, relationship is based on business. Mm-hmm. In Asia, other than business, there's a personal aspect to it. You build a relationship, you get closer, you go out for dinner, go around them, you go into Korean restaurants and Japanese restaurants and have fun and stuff, So it's a totally different kind of a personal relationship you build in Asia as opposed to the relationship you build in the US.
Let's move to, I'm tempted to explore the lead there on Korean and Japanese restaurants, but I'd leave that alone. I want to move to the philanthropic part, Sridhar. Your role in creating and leading various important philanthropic initiatives, particularly for the Indian American community, the center at University of Pennsylvania, Sobti Chair and Raj Center at Columbia, and several other initiatives, the Mattu Center that you have led and contributed to significantly. How do you see the activity done by the community, Indian American community and diaspora, and how do you see it change? How has it changed over last decade or two?
It is an awakening you get. For example, once I visited the Sai Baba Center in Whitefield near Bangalore. Mm-hmm. The moment I entered there, there was a board which said, "Hands that give are holier than lips that pray." Some other that registered in my mind very strongly. And when I came back, I thought, I came from a very, very, very ordinary family. Very ordinary family. I even had to borrow money from the pawn jewelers to pay the fees for my master's degree in Maharaja's College. So I came from that background. And when I succeeded here, I thought it's time for me to give back to the society in which I live and the society in which I came from. And since I came from India, my original focus was almost entirely on India. And my most important charity was, now the names you mentioned, the most important charitable initiative undertaken in my life is Shanti Bhavan Educational Trust. I don't know if you heard about Shanti Bhavan.
I've heard. You have introduced me to them and I've heard about them, yes. But yeah. Why don't you tell us about what they do?
Any education institution providing state-of-the-art boarding-style school education, the poorest of the poor, mostly the untouchable community, divided equally between girls and boys. And today, I've been associated with them for nearly 21 years. I created an endowment there for the college education of the kids graduating from the school, along with two of my friends. It has been the most rewarding and satisfying experience in my life, in the sense that the best return on my investment, return in terms of satisfaction, I'm not talking physical dollars, which I ever made.
Sure.
Today, Shanti Bhavan has, apart from the people working in India for first-class companies like, you know, Microsoft, Wipro, and Google and all that, Goldman Sachs, there are 22 people studying in the United States. One girl is studying in the Ivy League in Dartmouth.
Wow.
One girl is doing PhD in clinical psychology at Hofstra University. It's been a wonderful experience, and there is no institution like Shanti Bhavan anywhere in the world. It is so unique. And then, of course, I did the first initiative here was establishing the Jagdish Bhagwati Chair in Columbia University. Long before the Deepak Raj Center, then I said Center for Advanced Study of India, along with the SOPIS, also send the associate with the Center for India Studies at Stony Brook University. So mainly my focus was on education-related fields applicable to India, predominantly.
Yeah.
Except that last year, it dawned on me that we should also do something in the healthcare. So Deepak Raj, Rajesh Sethi and I joined together and set up an endowed professorship for research in musculoskeletal disorders and diseases impacting the Indian American community in the tri-state area. We set it up at the NYU Langone Hospital of the School of Grossman School of Medical Sciences in New York University. It set up in October last year.
Is that a particular area that affects the Indian American community? I've heard about the heart issues of the community, but I didn't know that muscular skeleton issues were also specific to the community.
Joint-related diseases, on a percentage basis, it is much larger among the Indian community in the tri-state area.
I see.
Why people are doing the research, etc. But I would say the first reason people are ascribing to that is, you know, diabetics. The world average for Indian community for diabetes is pretty high.
Okay. Yeah, diabetes is definitely a big issue.
It's 6 as opposed to 0.6 in the world for the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So this research is, we are finding the professional research into starting. I hope something very good will come out of that.
So education, health,
education, healthcare. Been,
yeah.
That's the areas of focus.
What, now, not everybody has reached a stage where they are able to spare millions of dollars for philanthropy. What would you say to young professionals? How should they get engaged, at what age, with what kind of a contribution? What would be a good way for some of the young professionals to get engaged in giving?
I don't know how to exactly answer that question. I would say that once I reached a comfortable stage of my career, mm-hmm. which I would say was 92, 93, I became deputy president. I used to get good stock options and bonds, etc. I made it a point to contribute about 20 to 25% of my adjusted gross income for charities. That was the yardstick I made for myself.
And an ongoing thing. You did not save up to do a major thing later on. You kind of started doing it annually at that rate.
You know, Sandeep, luck also played a part in the sense that when I left Amex, I had tons of stock options. Mm-hmm. And it was over a period of time, two splits, etc., it was a ridiculously low price. Yeah. I made a lot of money cashing those options. Mm-hmm. Even Lehman Brothers, I was lucky to sell the shares at about $120-$160 a share. When people who stayed on, they had to accept those shares as a toilet paper when Lehman bellied up. You know, a few years later. And RRE also, it was a very lucrative assignment, although I was there only for 3-4 years. Lucrative in the sense that partners used to be preferred allocation for IPOs at the issue price. That also gave me a good kind of income.
Got it.
And then VTOs also turned out to be a tremendous investment. For us, because I started along with Shankar with yours in 1990, early in 2001, I think, you know. Mm-hmm. And 2017, the first liquidity took place, and it was a tremendous payback.
And of course, you deserved making those profits and gains, but not everybody plows them back. So great that you did and set an example that we can learn from and follow. Let's move to some personal stories.
A combination of reasons, you know, for some of the people may not have reached my age. They say we'll wait, you know. And some of the people, you know, I would say I don't want to name anybody, you know, I know several people in API, you know, American Association of Physicians of Indian Origin, and several people in the IIT alums. I'm sorry, you're an IIT alum. I call some of them deep pockets and short arms, you know, which is true. At the same time, there are some great people like, you know, Deepak Raj, who opens up the wallets weekly, and Manish Pabrai. You know Manish Pabrai?
Yes. I don't know him, but I know of him.
You know, so there are people. And Prem Vatsa of IIT Chennai, who is based in Toronto.
Yeah.
No, Fairfax Holdings. There are people, you know, but you can count them on your fingers.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get personal, Sridhar. Tell us about your childhood. What are a couple of the major influences that shaped your life early on?
In my childhood?
Yes. We say that, you know, the story you hear as a child is what you repeat all your life. What did you hear as a child that has shaped you? Heard, saw, experienced?
You know, it is very difficult for me to openly say, you know, the experience I went through the childhood. I would say my dad was an idol. Mm-hmm. Very simplistic person. He always said, study well. Don't look back. Don't look what others are doing. Take care of yourselves. Mm-hmm. And as I told you before, you know, I didn't have the money to go to college, etc. And my father's brother came to my help. He paid for 6 years of college education financing. Mm-hmm. So I was very lucky to have that. That is an experience I can never forget. It doesn't happen these days, you know, because I would say one thing that made it happen was probably because we all lived in a joint family, you know, like a Hindu undivided family.
Yeah.
For a long period of time.
Did that shape your view on how you should help others get educated?
My childhood life and the difficulties I went through during my life and the difficulties my parents and uncle had to face to educate me definitely had an influence on my thinking as to helping the others.
I know you as very confident, almost clear speaking clearly, almost blunt sometimes, clear in your thinking. What advice would you give, what clear, blunt advice would you give a 25-year-old Sridhar if you could go back and mentor that person?
I would say that you must have an objective in life. You must have a goal as to how you reach that objective. What are the action steps? And you should relentlessly and religiously follow that to the T. You will not succeed always. You will be occasional setbacks. Doesn't matter. Think about the setbacks when it happens. Try to cross the hurdle, but follow the journey.
To set a goal early in life.
Yeah.
Let's do a section. We do a rapid fire. I'll ask you quick questions. Short, quick answer, whatever comes to your mind. What's the most played song on your iPhone or phone or whatever you use to listen to music?
You can call me a Cassius Clay of Shakespeare, but I'm not a music fan. Okay. What I have is the Dhanvantari Mantra, which I chant. Dhanvantari Mantra.
Mandodri Mantra, okay.
Which I chant whenever I get time. I do that 11 times when I get up, but 11 times when before I sleep. Have you heard that mantra?
I haven't.
You want to listen to
that? I will look it up on YouTube after this.
I can tell you one sentence.
Sure.
It says you can edit it and take it away, or whatever,
Yeah.
Ugram Viram Mahavishnum Jalantam Sarvatomukam Narasimham Vishanam Padram Rityor Muktim Namami Aham.
What does it mean? What does it signify?
It is in transcript. You said you look at the book and you'll find it. I'll leave it to you for that.
Okay. I know you're a passionate foodie as well as a wine lover. What's your favorite dish to eat and where?
Well, I would say my favorite dish is Dosso Nune in one of the best Italian restaurants.
Okay. And
perfection.
Cooked to perfection, dorsal, very light, nice flaky fish. What's your favorite wine? You know, I'm always afraid. You're in my deal is if you're going to go out for dinner, you're going to bring the wine. I'm happy to pick the dinner, but because I'm always intimidated by your wine knowledge. What's your favorite wine, Sridhar?
Well, my favorite wine is Bordeaux. And within the category, I like Margaux. I like Chateau Margaux. I like Chateau Haut-Brion.
Yeah.
I like Chateau Mouton Rothschild. Chateau Lafite Rothschild. I have very limited quantity of those in my cellar. If you ever find time to come in when the COVID-19 is over, we can afford share a bottle of wine.
Of course.
I enjoy my wine. I drink a couple of glasses of wine almost four or five times a week.
Well, that's what we love about you, your love for life and good things. What made you laugh out loud recently?
Because when I watch TV, Sandeep, to be honest, I watch CNN and CNBC. Beyond that, I watch sports, cricket, tennis, and basketball.
Yeah.
That's why I spend my time watching on TV. I don't watch these jokes and all that, I don't watch American Idol and Nine, etc. to make me laugh.
None of the comedy shows, none of the stand-ups, not Saturday Night Live.
No, I'm not that type of.
Well, some of the politics last year has been pretty funny as well. So maybe that made you laugh or cry, I don't know.
Yeah. Politics, I decided to step back from politics, for a reason that felt right to me 3-4 years ago.
Final question, Sridhar. What is the brand Sridhar Menon in your own words? If you were to describe your own personal brand, what would it be?
Very honest, very blunt, very straightforward, very sincere, who speaks up his mind, no matter what.
I can personally vouch to all those attributes, Sridhar. It was fantastic talking to you. And I look forward to taking you up on that offer to share a bottle of wine soon. And I hope this COVID thing goes away soon and you're back from your trip to India and we'd be able to get together. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sandeep. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.